Here are some words with which to consider the economic news of the day. Protectionism, mercantilism, also trade war, and now what? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Thursday today, the 31st day of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So, look, we have been bandying about the phrase trade war for a couple of 3 months now, right? Ever since President Trump caught basically the entire global economy unawares when he said this on the 1st of March.
It'll be 25% for steel. It'll be 10% for aluminum.
But one set of tariffs and the various exemptions and exclusions and carve-outs to those tariffs does not a trade war make. It's when those exemptions go away, as did the exemptions for Canada, Mexico, and the European Union today, and the retaliation gets going, that things really start to get ugly.
In response to these measures, Canada intends to impose tariffs against imports of steel, aluminum, and other products from the United States.
That's Canada's Foreign Minister, Chrystia Freeland. One of the characteristics of a trade war, by the way, tariffs that are directly retaliatory, sometimes referred to, although not often on this program, as tit for tat.
25% and 10% are the tariff rates today imposed by the United States on Canada. We are today publishing two lists of goods. One list which will be subject to a 25% tariff. The second list will be subject to a 10% tariff.
Another trade war indicator? Specificity in targeting.
These countermeasures will only apply to goods originating from the United States.
And also, trade wars are typically really tough to end.
These countermeasures will take effect on July 1st, 2018. They will remain in place until the United States eliminates its trade restrictive measures against Canada.
It might be relevant to note at this point that Canada is the single largest source of imported steel to this economy, 17% of our imported steel. It's also our second largest single country trading partner behind China, and it's one of the closest allies the United States has. And that gets me to this. The statement from the White House this morning announcing these tariffs, President Trump, it said, is taking action to protect America's national security from the effects of global oversupply of steel and aluminum. The relevant section of the law here is Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962, as amended, which lets the president adjust key imports in the interests of national security. But the letter of the law doesn't really explain everything that is going on here global economy strategy-wise. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman starts us off.
The Trump administration says it's trying to protect domestic metal producers so they can make what we need in a crisis. And Jacob Kierkegaard at the Peterson Institute says the national security justification might work under World Trade Organization rules. But, he says,
I think the deeper underlying motive is this is an administration that really wants to combat outsourcing and make it unprofitable for American industries to locate production abroad.
That would keep jobs here.
And they want to force pretty much everybody else to come and invest in the United States.
Creating more jobs here. So we make and export more, import less, the trade deficit drops, another administration goal. Though economist Renee Bowen at UC San Diego says that wouldn't really help domestic industries, it
simply means that we're going to restrict consumers from having the products that they would like to pay for.
And some of the industries the administration is out to help aren't on board with imposing tariffs on major allied trading partners. Here's Lauren Wilk of the U.S. Aluminum Association.
The central issue facing the industry is illegally subsidized overcapacity in China.
She says making imports from Canada, Mexico, and the EU more expensive will just make it harder for U.S. companies to add jobs. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Tariffs kind of seem like a thing between countries, right? But individual businesses often wind up holding the economic bag. Walter Siegenthaler is the executive vice president at the Max Detweiler Corporation. They use imported steel to make, among other things, something called doctor blades used in industrial printing. Mr. Siegenthaler, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
First of all, sir, tell me, your reaction to the news today, would you? What was your gut reaction?
Well, I kind of expected it, that it would go this way. Of course, it puts us into some kind of an uncertainty. But we are really focusing on getting our own exclusion, not counting on an exclusion of the EU, because I think we have a good case to make, since the steel we are importing does not get manufactured here in the US. It's not available So I think we hopefully get our exclusion approved.
If you don't get your exclusion, your exemption, and these tariffs go into effect as the president announced today, what happens to you and the steel you need to make those Dr. Blades?
Well, our product gets considerably more expensive, and we're going to have a real problem at hand because we have a number of competitors. They produce Dr. Blades outside of the U.S., and they can import the finished product without a duty on it. We will be in a disadvantage.
Yeah, that's an important point, because what we're talking about here are tariffs on imported raw materials, steel, not tariffs on imported finished products.
That's correct.
Your competitors, then, I imagine, will undersell you. Your profitability will go down. What happens to the people who work at that plant there in North Carolina?
Well, if it gets to that point, then we have to really consider, does it still make sense to manufacture here? Because we also manufacture in Switzerland, India, and China. We could import from there the finished goods, but that's not our target. Our target is to keep manufacturing here, so we will fight for our exclusion.
How many jobs are we talking about, sir?
Directly affected in production, it's 16, but if we have to close down that manufacturing, we also will have to cut down on overhead, so we are more looking at about 20 people.
Walter Siegenthaler, he's the executive vice president at Max Detweiler. We got him at their factory in North Carolina. Mr. Siegenthaler, thanks so much for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Tim Poole is with the Gemini Group, another imported steel user trying to figure out what's going on. Mr. Poole, it's good to have you on.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Tell me what the Gemini Group does, would you, and why you need imported steel?
Well, the Gemini Group manufactures extrusion dies out of H13 steel.
Is that good steel, H13 steel?
Yeah, H13 is a high-quality tool steel.
Okay, and you've been getting it from overseas, right?
The majority of it, yes. We import it from Brazil and the EU.
All right, so given the news of the day, what are these tariffs going to mean for you and for this H13 steel that you need?
Obviously, there's going to be an increase in price coming to us in our purchasing. You know, it's going to be a price that we will, or an increase that we'll pass along to the customer, and we've already talked to the customer about it. You know, so yeah, does it impact us? Yeah, it has some impact, but it's nothing we can't work with, I think, for future. And then, of course, you know, the future may change.
Have you explored, in your capacity as a purchasing guy, sourcing this stuff domestically?
Absolutely, we have, and we have found a few domestic suppliers that we're working with right now.
Right. What are those conversations like when I imagine you go cold calling these companies saying, hey, do you have H13 steel I can buy?
Well, when you're in the business long enough, you get to know a lot of the domestic steel mills and so forth. And so, yeah, you just start calling them and say, hey, look, you know, what can you guys do? There's one in particular. They do make the H13 steel that we need. It's just a matter of pricing at that point, though.
Yeah. So now you're motivated to find a domestic source for your production with these tariffs.
Right. Just simply because if the tariffs are creating such an impact and now the domestic suppliers can be more competitive with their price, even though domestic steel is going up substantially.
What's your tolerance level for how changeable trade policy is nowadays? I mean, it seems to be going back and forth and back and forth between trade wars on, trade wars off. I don't know what's happening. Where are the tariffs? How are you dealing with that? It's like the definition of uncertainty.
Well, it is the definition of uncertainty, but we look at it, or at least I look at it from a standpoint of the long term is that it's probably the best for our country as a whole. To me, it is time for a change. You know, that's how we make our country better.
Tim Poole, the Gemini Group. Mr. Poole, thanks so much for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. No problem.
So the Canadians and the Mexicans are pretty trade angry with us. The Mexicans announced their list of tariffs this morning as well. Ditto the Europeans. They are tariffing and taking the U.S. to the World Trade Organization because after Canada, Europe is our second largest supplier of foreign steel products. Chief among the things they are trying to figure out right now, what are they going to do with all that steel if they can't sell it here? From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that one.
It's not yet clear how much European steel will now be priced out of the US market or exactly what will happen to that European product that's turned away. Charles de Lusignan speaks for European steelmakers.
Some products might be used in other places. Some products might be scaled back in terms of production. But we don't know at this stage what that impact is really going to be. It's very early days.
The omens for the European industry are not good, however. The global oversupply of steel has been put at 400 million tons. Yeah, that's 400 million tons of the stuff which the world doesn't want to buy. Gareth Stace of the UK Steel Association says if the US market dries up, a lot of foreign steel will head this way.
Something like 20 million tons of steel now will need to find a new home to go to. And because we are a free and open market here in the EU, it'll come here, we believe, therefore further damage our sector.
The European Commission said today it may seek permission from the World Trade Organization to bar these unwanted imports. It will file a complaint against the US tariffs and impose its own retaliatory tariffs on $3 billion worth of American imports into the EU. It all looks very ominous, and not just for the steel industry, says Stephen Booth of the Open Europe think tank.
It's possibly the first steps as part of a trade war, and I think that's what everyone is concerned about.
The EU's countermeasures that could escalate this dispute are expected by the middle of June. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You know what Wall Street traders hate almost as much as a whiff of another European debt crisis? When the whiff of a trade war gets real, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. On the theory that there is definitely stuff y'all want to know about trade wars and trade policy in general that we here are not thinking of, I went out on Twitter this morning and asked for your questions. We got bunches of them, it's safe to say. This one came from Sean Burns. He asked, how long will it take for these tariffs to affect the prices of consumer goods? Marketplace's Amy Scott was on answer duty today.
That's actually starting to happen already. Prices of aluminum and steel have been rising in the last couple of months due to the tariffs already in place on countries like Russia and China that did not get exemptions. Now adding in Canada, Mexico, and the European Union, prices are only going to go up further. It takes a while for that to sort of work itself through the rest of the economy, maybe weeks in some cases, months in others. But ultimately, consumers are going to end up paying more for things like cars and refrigerators, cans of food and beer. There's just a whole range of products that could be affected by these tariffs.
We got this one from Matt Dietrich, which requires just a tiny bit of a setup. He wants to know under what conditions China might leverage its reserves of U.S. debt and how likely are they to use it in a trade war. Before we get to the answer, you need to know that according to the Treasury Department, as of March this year, China holds a bit more than $1.1 trillion in U.S. government debt. Those are Treasury bonds, in other words. We called Mary Lovely. She's a professor of economics at Syracuse University for the answer to this one.
China has never threatened to leverage the debt. Any kind of retaliation that China uses as a response to the Section 301 tariffs or steel tariffs or any other tariffs will almost certainly be another set of tariffs on our goods. So they've already indicated pretty clearly how they intend to retaliate. They're very good students of American economy and American politics, and so I expect that they will aim their tariff arrow quite clearly to hit specific targets in the U.S.
We put a bunch more answers to your trade questions. Really, it's some, not a bunch. But anyway, the answers are up at marketplace.org. And please do keep them coming. I'm at Kai Rizdahl on Twitter. The show is at Marketplace. Coming up.
I tell people I'm like the old Life commercial. Give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything.
The guy who will make anything to make it in America. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 1% today, 251 points, 24,415. NASDAQ down 0.2%, 20 points, 74.42. The S&P 500 off 0.6%, 18 points, 27.05. Steel and aluminum companies faced a turbulent day, one might say. ArcelorMittal, the steel company based in Luxembourg, gained 0.3% today. U.S. Steel up 1.7%. Chicago's Century Aluminum up 3.3% today. The race to get driverless vehicles on the road is heating up. General Motors revved up 12% today on the news that SoftBank Vision Fund is going to invest $2.25 billion in its driverless car division. Bond prices, well, they fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 2.86%. You're listening to Marketplace. Anne in Stamford, Connecticut, wrote to say that Marketplace and Make Me Smart help her contextualize so much of what is happening in the world right now in a way that is approachable and entertaining. Anne, thanks for being a friend to Marketplace and for supporting our work. To join her as a Marketplace investor, donate online at marketplace.org. And thanks to everybody who contributes to keep public service journalism strong. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. As we talked about a little bit, all right, more than a little bit, up at the top of the program, you can talk trade policy until the cows come home, but it's where that policy meets the actual economy that you get to an understanding of how much it really matters. We've been doing a survey of one of the key parts of the American trade economy this week, manufacturing. Three slices of how we make things in this country today. We've done textiles, denim in particular, and a company that's had to reinvent itself as the trade economy changed around it. We've done iron, literally an iron foundry, where some of the new changes to American trade policy are more than welcome. And today, a company that makes, well, it makes a whole lot of stuff. We are in Columbus, Georgia once again.
John Anker.
How are you, John?
Thanks for coming.
Where John Anker started Anker Pack in 2004. He'd been a salesman, and you can tell he was good at it in that salesman kind of way, but he wanted to run his own business. Originally, he was doing full-service packaging, literally wrapping up products that other companies had made, getting them in boxes or onto shipping pallets, and getting them on their way. And then he saw his chance.
One of my first customers I ever had was closing a plant and offshoring it to China. And I ran to him, and I said, "Wait, why are you going to China? Can I do that?" And they said, "John, we're moving all our manufacturing. All you're doing is packaging for us." And ended up, they came back and gave me an opportunity to keep some of the manufacturing here as opposed to moving it as they originally planned.
So you went from packing to manufacturing. What was that first manufacturing gig you had?
It was a really hard one, and it was manufacturing bobby pins.
Bobby pins like you put in your hair?
Yeah. Taking steel wire, flatten it. Then we had to paint it, and then the third step was putting it on a bobby pin forming machine and forming the pin and automatically carding it.
And you made all the investment in capital equipment and worker training and all of that.
So it was a partnership in its truest sense. They already owned the equipment. They were moving it and closing it down, moving it to China. So their choice was, number one, send it to China like they planned on. Just move the equipment to China. China had the labor. They had the supply side, and Goody Products had the demand side. And so we picked up their equipment and gave them a second option. That was outsource it to an American company at the same price as an overseas provider. I mean the same price.
Show me around a little bit.
Anker competes on flexibility more than it does on price. He is profitable, maybe not as profitable as others might be, but he hustles. Anker Pack has three facilities, all of them in Columbus, about 240,000 square feet total. The one we're in now is where the manufacturing happens. All kinds of manufacturing, too. Composite fabrics, commercial refrigerator compressors, a kind of backing for rugs known as monk's cloth, and so much more.
Ooh, man. So what is that? What does that smell? Is that like oil and something, right? What is that?
Well, so we were running bobby pins, and we had another opportunity. I'm going out trying to find ways to manufacture large volume of small widgets, and I found another company that was closing down in Tennessee, and they were moving this whole factory to Mexico.
What were they making?
They were making pencils and pens and erasers, all kinds of office products.
Wow.
So the smell that you asked about is we're heating up. We've got ovens. We're cooking stuff in ovens, and we've got it in that room in the back, and but you can smell it cooking.
That's great. Now, what are these guys making over here?
So we're making a special marker. This company was closing down in Lewisburg, and we ran to them and said, what can we do for you?
So is that your business model? What can we do for you? You're going to send this overseas. What can we do for you?
Absolutely. I tell people I'm like the old Life commercial. Give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything. And Mikey likes it. They were closing this whole factory down and moving to Mexico. And when I ran in there and said, what can I do? They said, John, it's all been slated. Here's the plant layout in Mexico. Here's where these machines are going. I left and I came back home, and they called me 2 weeks later and said, you know what? We've been thinking about it. We might give you an opportunity to quote on some of this stuff that might be suited to keep here in America.
This is going to sound worse than I mean it to sound, but you almost don't care what you're making, so long as you're making something here in Columbus, Georgia.
That's right. I'm not real picky. I've said it many times. It takes 100 pennies to make a dollar, and all I want to do is make one penny at a time. I'd like to make a dollar at a time, but if it takes 100 pennies, I'll do it that way too.
Oh, wait, I know what those are. Those are those little markers that you peel back the string in the wrapper and you peel off the, like, the paper sort of coating or whatever it is, right?
That's right.
It's it's like a grease pencil or something.
That's exactly what it is,
which is what we used to use when we were editing radio on quarter-inch tape.
So these are some of our finished products.
Oh, yeah, there you go. They're all packed and ready to go. Sharpie Pro, China marker. Why are you here in Columbus? Just because you're from Columbus?
It's a town I call home now. I tell you, there's a lot of good things about being in this town. We're an old mill town. Since the NAFTA came into effect, just the textile industry alone has lost over 2.5 million jobs, direct jobs, not counting the ripple effect.
Are you worried, by the way, about NAFTA or TPP or the trade tariffs or any of that stuff that you hear in the economic headlines right now?
I'm only mostly worried about our country if we continue on the same path.
Explain that a little bit.
Well, as it relates to NAFTA, my workers would like to make more money. I would like to make more money. I'm competing, and I don't mind competing on a global market. But I want it to be apples to apples. So I'm worried that if we don't modify or put some more bigger walls up on NAFTA, it's going to continue to be a slow bleed long term, that we won't ever be able to continue the trend as a world-class leader and economic leader.
John anchors a big part of the local economy here in Columbus. He provides something like 70 entry-level manufacturing jobs, and he does it really by recognizing his place in the global economy.
Well, so let me ask you this. Do you think the future, with all respect to what you're doing here, right, is this the future of American manufacturing?
Well, we hear a lot of rhetoric about high-tech, high-paying jobs. It's not rhetoric. It is what we want as a country. I like it. I didn't mean to say rhetoric. I love those jobs, but I feel like my gift is to help lift people up to put them in those jobs. Now, there's other people that are out there now that are working at these high-tech jobs that have now bought a house and a car. They're married with children, and they came right here from Anchor Pack on minimum wage is where they started. Yeah. There's too many people falling through the cracks. I used to say, our school system is a Jeffersonian system. We're scraping the gems from the rubble. That's the way it started, and that's still the kind of way it is. You got to fit into this mold of graduating in 12 years, or you're just no good. Or you got to go to college, or you're just no good. If you got a lot of rubble and you put it down on a dirt road, you can build a really nice highway. Well, I'm kind of proud of Anchor Pack. We're building a highway, and we've got a wonderful culture of family here.
So what I hear you saying is you want these jobs to be worth something.
I want them to be worth something.
Even the machine operator making the grease pencil jobs, right?
That's exactly right. It's a stepping stone. I can tell you time after time, people that we've lifted up, and today they've gone on and they're doing high-tech manufacturing, and I'm proud of that. That's my mission. And I think we ought to be doing more of this right here in America.
I said on Tuesday when we started this series that manufacturing is worth about 12.5 million jobs in this economy. Between AnchorPack and the Boyd brothers at Goldman's Foundry and Monty Galbraith making textiles, we've accounted for, what, about 350 of them this week? We'll call it a non-representative sampling, yes, but the moral of the manufacturing story does hold up, that politics and trade policy and the way the global economy's been changing the past couple of decades plays out differently depending on which slice of manufacturing you're in. And as we're seeing just today with the steel and aluminum tariffs, none of that happens in isolation. We've got pictures and more from each of the three factories we visited to report these stories. They are at marketplace.org. Also, if you missed parts one and two of our manufacturing trilogy, you can catch them on the Marketplace podcast. This final note on the way out today, just because I find it interesting. Chrystia Freeland, the Canadian foreign minister we had up at the top of the program, she said there was a whole list of U.S. products that are going to impose tariffs on besides steel and aluminum. Here, for your edification, is just a quick sampling. Yogurt, coffee, comma, roasted, colon, not decaffeinated, soups and broths and preparations therefore, manicure or pedicure preparations, also whiskeys and automatic dishwasher detergents. I mean, I love that. All right, that was a whole lot of trade and tariffs, but that stuff matters. You know, Dow Industrial's off 1% today. NASDAQ down 0.2%. S&P 500 off 0.6%. John Buckley, Eve Epstein, Stephen Gregory, John Gordon, Danielle Irby, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deirdre Defke. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Soul to Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Soul to Story are available now.